Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. As you just heard in our conversation with Congressman Gerald Nadler of New York, the White House is under increasing pressure over President Obama's call for a public insurance plan to compete with the private sector. And now there may be signals from the administration that it is willing to compromise. Here is Kathleen Sebelius, the Health and Human Services Secretary, speaking yesterday on CNN.
This piece of the puzzle has had enormous focus, and the president continues to believe that it's good to have consumer choice, let people choose an option in the new marketplace, and it's good to have competition for the private insurers who will inherit a lot of new customers, and without competition, costs could skyrocket. In a monopoly system, it's not a great way to hold down costs. So he continues to be very supportive of some options for consumers. What we don't know is exactly what the Senate Finance Committee is likely to come up with. They've been more focused on a co-op, not-for-profit co-op as a competitor as opposed to a straight government-run program. And I think what's important is choice and competition. And I'm convinced at the end of the day the plan will have both of those. But that is not the essential element.
So is the Obama administration willing to compromise on the so-called public option? And will it consider a proposal for a nonprofit health cooperative being developed in the Senate instead? Here to help us understand it all and what it could mean for you is Sean Telly, editor-at-large at Fortune Magazine. And Sean, welcome to WNYC. You're doing a series of pieces, I understand, on healthcare this week on Fortune.com.
Yes, I am. And I wrote one that ran last Friday and going to write one about three this week.
Well, how lucky for us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Here. Well, first things first, there's a lot of confusion out there about all of these terms being bandied about. Let's just clear it all up. What is the public option and what does it mean for the average citizen?
Well, the public option was going to be offered on the state level through these exchanges that are going to offer also a variety of private plans. And it was supposed to keep the private insurers, quote, honest, unquote, by setting prices that supposedly were reasonable. We don't exactly know what that means, but the pricing under the public option was supposed to be based pretty much on Medicare reimbursements. The danger of the public option, according to its opponents, was that inevitably, any big government program is going to underprice the private sector, and we would move to a single-payer system very rapidly because of the public option. This caused an outcry on the part of the not only the Republicans, but moderate Democrats, and also at these town hall meetings. And that's why Kathleen Sebelius essentially bailed on the plan yesterday. The very liberal Democrats, including Howard Dean, say it's essential to reform. It sounds to me like they just don't have enough votes in the Senate to pass any bill with a public option, and it's dead.
Now, what exactly did Sebelius say, though? Or I guess I really should ask, what did she really mean? Is it being misinterpreted? Are we making too much of it? Or is it really dead, as you say?
Well, according to Ken Conrad, who's a moderate Republican, the Senate leaders, the Democratic leaders, need a lot of moderate Republican votes to get to 50 votes and have Biden break the tie. And they will not go for this public option. Ken Conrad said today in the Washington Post, and he's a moderate Democrat, that the votes aren't there for the public option. That's the best evidence that no plan proposed by Obama with a public option will go through. So I think that the White House is simply bowing to the political realities. The House Democrats, many of them, say they won't vote for a plan without a public option.
Yeah.
I think that that's not correct. They will eventually vote for a plan that does not have it, but certainly they are very unhappy with the present position of the White House, which is bailing on one of the most important parts to the original plan.
Yeah, we just had Congressman Gerald Nadler on, and he and his colleagues in the House have written a letter, and they insist that the public option is a must have and that they will vote no without it. And I guess my next question for you is, what happens to the Obama base, the left. You know, we've heard a lot from the right in the last several days and weeks, but what about all the folks who feel adamant support for the public option as part of the Obamacare proposal?
Well, two things can happen. I think Obama politically will be in good shape if he can force through what's left of his plan without the public option, because the plan without the public option still puts the government in charge. The cooperatives that have been proposed would provide supposedly some competition for private plans that would replace the public option. But the most important thing is that the exchanges that he would set up would dictate the deductibles, the size of the plans, what's in them, community rating, where everyone pays the same price. There would be no choice. In other words, he would impose what is essentially a government template on every insurer and every purchaser of our insurance. He would get to the same conclusion without the public option. So I think that the Democrats would vote for it, frankly, if they were forced to, and that would be a victory for Obama. The problem now is that he has given up his strongest bargaining chip early in the fight. In other words, if he's really pulling back from the public option, which is what really terrified conservatives, that's off the table, right? So now they can go to work on the other things they don't like in the plan, which may include the what is required under these exchanges, which is very, very restrictive. You can't have high deductible insurance, for instance. Everyone has to pay the same. Young people subsidize old people. There's plenty to object to in the bill without the public option, and that may be the focus now of the Republicans. Now, the other argument would be that the Republicans think they've won a big victory and are just going to kind of fold on the rest of the plan. I think it's up in the air. A lot of Republicans think they've won now that the public option is dead, but I think it was a strategic mistake to take it off the table, because now the Democrats don't really have anything to terrify the Republicans with.
Just as a matter of political strategy. All right, my guest is joining me here in New York. Are you with me in New York, Sean? Where are you?
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm in the Time Life building.
Good. Nearby. You sound so clear and close by. Sean Tully is with Fortune, editor-at-large at Fortune magazine. He has a series on healthcare that is on fortune.com. Last filed on Friday. We'll be filing all week long, and you can check him out there. And right now you have a call, Sean. Nick is calling in from Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Nick, you're on with Sean Tully.
Thank you. It's interesting that we have to hear from a guy from Fortune magazine how much the president botched the negotiating posture. He would have been much better off starting out with single payer and getting the country to rally around that. Excuse me. And then all of these town hall meetings would have been filled with single payer advocates yelling for that. And then he could have compromised and gotten the public option.
I think your view of negotiating strategies is probably right on. Certainly, if he wanted to push the most radical possible plan, he certainly is not going to get there by dumping the public option in the middle of August.
Yeah, what's going to happen now? If this public option, if this goes through without a public option, Obama will have lost his base. I will have felt betrayed. Millions and millions and millions of the heart and soul of the party will feel betrayed and let down and sold out. Don't tell me that these co-ops are the same thing as a real public option. Mm-hmm. That's a lie. That's not true. They are watered down. If you go from one part of the country to the other, the co-ops won't work. There's all kinds of problems with co-ops. I advise anybody listening to this to go to Physicians for a National Health Plan on the web, pnhp.org or .com, and go there and look and see what real single-payer advocates are going for. This needs to be dumped all together, and it needs to go into the 2010 elections, and let the 2010 elections be a referendum on real reform, because the lies that the public that the insurance industry is putting out cannot be sustained for a whole year. We are being railroaded, people. We are being railroaded.
It is amazing to me, with this call from Nick and our earlier call from Bob, the amount of passion in people's voices when they call in about health care, and of course we've seen it at the town halls on both sides of the issue. Sean, let me ask you this question. Help us to understand the distinction between these cooperatives, the health cooperatives that are now being talked about today quite seriously, versus the public option that was on the table as recently as Friday.
Right. Well, the easiest way to think about the public option is that it would essentially extend Medicare coverage, or something very similar to Medicare coverage, to about 200 million working Americans. That includes their families as well. Now, it wouldn't happen right away because a lot of those people are covered by ERISA plans that eventually would fade out. But you'd have the option of essentially enrolling in Medicare, but a Medicare, once again, for working people. Medicare obviously now starts for people who are over 65. And they would pay the same reimbursement rates as Medicare. They wouldn't have to have reserves the way that private insurance companies do. They would set prices strictly by price controls that are set by the federal government. And the danger was that they would underprice the private sector and you would have nothing left but Medicare. Okay. The cooperatives are supposed to be run much more along a private model where they would be owned by the actual policyholders. They would be forced to have reserves like a private company. Therefore, their costs would be approximately the same as a private company and they wouldn't automatically drive private insurers out of business. That's the selling point. But Nick was right. They are essentially a watered-down type of insurance that is supposed to keep the private insurers honest. Now, the problem with the private insurers is that in most states, they have 50 to 90% of the market. They're not terribly competitive. So a better solution would be to allow people to shop across state lines for insurance. That would completely create enormous amount of competition, and that's not even on the table. The Democrats want to hermetically seal every market by state, even though there are 300% price differences across state lines. You know, 1 mile away from New York to Pennsylvania, young people can buy insurance policies in Pennsylvania for $1,000, and in New York it's $5,000, but they can't shop for insurance in New York. So that's not a competitive market. The plan is not competitive, and the co-ops won't make it competitive.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and my guest is Sean Telly, editor-at-large at Fortune Magazine. We're welcoming your calls, 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. I want to ask you, Sean, about the tone of this debate across America. Of course, the media picks up on those town halls where something exciting happens, and President Obama made that point in his town hall on Sunday. If the town hall goes well and everything is collegial and cordial, it gets reported less than if someone is escorted out or shouts at his or her congressperson. But what does it say to you about the amount of passion, even vitriol, surrounding this debate? Is it because of orchestrated participants, or is it because of the subject matter itself and how deeply affected each American is by the health care question?
I think it's the latter. People are really worried what's going to happen to their health insurance. And I think a lot of older people who are covered by Medicare are worried that a lot of the cuts necessary to pay for the over $1 trillion in extra spending, which only happens over 6 years, by the way, not 10, will be paid for on the backs of the Medicare population. So older people are very concerned that their benefits are going to be cut substantially, which is a real danger. They're a very, very vocal, passionate group. They've come out in force in these meetings. So certainly their concerns are about the quality of their care and the availability of care. One of the problems is when you insure a lot more people and you subsidize insurance enormously, which is the whole backbone of this plan, and people only spend, you know, 10 or 15 cents on the dollar for every dollar of healthcare they consume, they way overconsume. There's a lot of waste in the system. They use too much healthcare. They go to the doctor a lot more than they really should. They don't shop according to prices. So the whole system gets overloaded and you have to ration it. You can't give something away for free and not expect people to overuse it. When that happens, you end up rationing, which is what we found in Canada, in Britain, in all countries that either very, very heavily subsidize healthcare or have a single payer system.
Now, we do have a doctor on the line. Dr. Arend is calling in from Chelsea here in Manhattan. You're on the line with Sean Telly from Fortune.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Arend. How are you?
Good. I apologize. I missed the last 10 minutes. I'm seeing patients. I just have a quick comment that I wanted to make.
Please go right ahead.
Yeah, so I'm the Director of Legislative Affairs for the New York chapter of the National Physicians Alliance. We represent over 20,000 physicians nationwide, and we certainly agree with the first caller that called in that we need reform now. You know, we really can't wait. Our patients need it desperately. We also agree with Congressman Nadler in the sense that the public health insurance option is really a critical piece for that, not only to contain costs, but also potentially to increase quality. We stand with 450,000 other physicians nationwide in supporting healthcare reform and the public health insurance option. So I just wanted to make that known that there are thousands of physicians nationwide that are in support of this.
Doctor, what is your response to the debate that has begun today about health cooperatives?
Well, again, we do agree with Congressman Nadler. I mean, you know, there are some examples of health cooperatives. There was the Group Health Cooperative of Puget Sound that was in the New York Times several weeks ago, which I'm familiar with, which is an excellent example of a very functional healthcare delivery system. It just happens to be a co-op. You know, there are just a few examples nationwide, and there's really, you know, no evidence to suggest that creating a national co-op from scratch at this point is going to show any substantial benefit in the near term for the reasons he described.
And Doctor, one last question. I know you probably have to get back to your patients, but we have the advantage of having a doctor on the line. I want to ask one follow-up.
Sure.
There is this real question about the uninsured and whether or not without the public option we can insure all of those uninsured Americans. Do you see a way to reach those uninsured without a public option through cooperatives or through any other plan? Single payer has come up in the 10 minutes that you were seeing patients, or is the public option the only option to reach those uninsured Americans?
Well, single payer, you know, President Obama has said himself, if you could start from scratch, single payer is a great thing, and that's probably true. The idea of creating a health insurance exchange with an array of options, one of which being a public health insurance option, is actually quite an elegant design and would have the opportunity to really, you know, create a high performing health system. It's going to be really, really difficult to do that without a public health insurance option. Again, there's, you know, no real evidence at this point that a co-op would be able to do that. You know, the subsidies that have been proposed in the H.R. 3200, the House bill, for anyone in the exchange are a step in that direction, but it's still, I mean, if you look at subsidies up to 400% of the federal poverty level, requiring even those folks to pay, you know, 12% of their income to health care, that's still a huge burden. And, you know, public health insurance option with its ability, you know, without all the administrative costs of private insurance, the need to make a profit, really has the ability to provide a streamlined, more efficient product and make it more affordable to patients. So at this point, it's really difficult, I think, to see how we could really make affordable, you know, high-quality insurance available to almost everyone without it.
All right. Well, Dr. Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to call in today here on the Brian Lehrer Show. Let me jump back out to Sean Tully, who joins us from Fortune, and ask you the same question. If the public option is off the table, and of course, we're really only on the first day of this conversation, because this is all spinning off of comments made over the weekend by the Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius and other comments made by President Obama in town halls in Colorado and elsewhere over the weekend. But if it's off the table, what about all of those uninsured Americans that have been so much a part of the dialogue and debate in the last several days and weeks? Will they remain uninsured? Will they be covered by these cooperatives? What will happen to them?
Well, there will be a requirement under the law that everyone buy insurance or pay 2.5% of their incomes as a penalty, as a tax. So everyone has to have insurance under this plan. Now, in Massachusetts, we have the same requirement in place, and a lot of people don't buy insurance. What they do is they pay the tax or the penalty, and then they don't buy insurance, and then when they get very, very sick, they jump into the most expensive possible subsidized plan. So they're gaming the system. The system has not improved a lot in Massachusetts, despite a tremendous increase in costs. So there would be a requirement that everybody have insurance, but why are these people uninsured? A lot of young people have dropped their insurance because of state laws that mandate in vitro fertilizations, mental health benefits, spinal manipulations, things they would never buy with their own money. This tremendously increased the cost of insurance, and then they have to pay the same amount on a fixed basis as people who are much older and require much more care. So the actual cost to a young person is way, way above their cost to the system, whereas most young people in their 20s or 30s should be able to buy insurance and can buy insurance in certain states like Illinois and Pennsylvania for $1,000 or $1,200, have to pay $5,500 in Connecticut or New York or New Jersey simply because of these state laws. The best thing to do is to let freedom ring, let people have their buy whatever policy is right for them with a high deductible that's $1,100, and then save what's left over for the routine things that would be much more price sensitive if people actually shop for them. There's plenty of money in the system to pay for health care. The problem is that people are blocked from spending their own money because of the company-provided insurance system that reduces your take-home pay, and your company buys the insurance for you. A better system is where the company gives you the money and you buy your own insurance.
All right. Well, Sean Tully, of course, this debate, we could go on.
Sure.
But we can't go on because I am out of time. But anyone who wants to continue to read your perspective can check out your column, fortune.com, your series of pieces on health care reform this week. And we appreciate your time here on The Brian Lehrer Show. That's Sean Tully, editor-at-large for Fortune magazine. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. When I come back, we will have a segment on dangerous vacations. Did you take one this summer? Call us. Let us know. 212-433-9692. That's 433-WMYC. We'll be right back.